All the Bees, Eric Parkin playing Pastorelle by Poulenc. BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio and online. It's a minute past one, and this is David Cornett with a summary of the news. David Cameron will meet the Russian President Vladimir Putin this afternoon to discuss the two-year conflict in Syria. Moscow has strongly condemned the EU's decision to lift the arms embargo against Syria to allow the West to send military aid to moderate rebel groups. The Deputy Prime Minister, Nick Clegg, says he and Mr Cameron haven't made any decisions on the issue. Mr Clegg told the Andrew Marr Show that he doesn't want Britain to get embroiled in a military conflict. Riot police in Turkey have used tear gas and water cannon against anti-government protesters on the streets of Istanbul this morning. Bulldozers have cleared the remains of a sit-in at Gezi Park and sealed off the area after evicting thousands of demonstrators overnight. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has warned the international community not to give in to wishful thinking in response to the election of Iran's new president. The moderate conservative cleric Hassan Rouhani won more than 50% of the vote. Western leaders have reacted with optimism, but Israel has urged them to keep up pressure on Iran for it to curb its nuclear program. A 32-year-old man's been arrested in Birmingham on suspicion of attempted murder after four people, including a police officer, were stabbed at a mosque in the city. The victims are in a stable condition in hospital. The local MP has said it wasn't a hate crime. A series of car bombs across southern Iraq have killed at least 24 people. Most of the violence took place in areas with a high concentration of Shia Muslims. A man who went missing with a 14-year-old girl from Doncaster has been charged with child abduction. The teenager was found in London on Friday, and a 35-year-old man, John Bush, was detained by officers. Two bodies have been recovered by emergency teams searching for a pair of climbers missing off the North Wales coast. The men were found in the sea near South Stack on Anglesey. And the weather, rain in Cornwall and Devon may spread a little further north through the day. Elsewhere there'll be a mixture of bright or sunny spells and isolated showers with light winds. BBC News and Weather at 3 minutes past one. And time now for the Early Music Show. Here's Catherine Bott.
Hello again and welcome to the second of two special early music shows celebrating, in my very personal selection of music, the affinity between the music and the genius of Henry Purcell and Benjamin Britten. If you missed yesterday's programme, which concentrated on instrumental music, well, there's lots of food for thought in it. And if you're internet inclined, it's available for another 6 days via the Radio 3 website or the BBC iPlayer. Perhaps you agree with every one of my comparisons. I think they show both composers at their best. Although it's a rather one-sided sort of empathy, Britten could learn from Purcell, but not the other way round, due to some rather inconvenient chronology. I've really delved into the repertoire to make these two programmes, and there wasn't time to include everything, so I'd be delighted to hear of any repertoire you think I may have missed. Now, on with the show. And as we ended yesterday with the overture to Dido and Aeneas, let's begin with a couple of scenes from the opera itself. First, to the hills and the vales, to the rocks and the mountains, to the musical groves and the cool, shady fountains. The Queen of Carthage and her royal guest have been enjoying a day in the country. Aeneas has been hunting and returns with the spoils of the chase.
Behold upon my bended spear a monster's head stands bleeding, with tushes far exceeding those did Venus hunts and tear.
The skies are clouded. Hark! Hark! How thunder rent the mountain homes asunder! Haste, haste to town! Haste, haste! Haste, haste! Haste to town! Haste, 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 haste! This open field no shelter!
Jove's command shall be obeyed. Tonight our anchors shall be weighed. But
from a recording made in the BBC studios in 1959, a plot-developing scene from Purcell's Dido and Aeneas. The Purcell singers and the English Opera Group Orchestra were conducted by Benjamin Britten. The roles of Aeneas and Dido were sung by Peter Peers and Claire Watson, who'd sung Peter Grimes and Ellen Orford on the recording of Britten's tragic opera released the previous year. Belinda was sung by Jeanette Sinclair and The Spirit by John Hiersey. Britten had intended to produce his own realisation of Purcell's opera at Glyndebourne as far back as 1947, but it was his own English opera group which first performed it in 1951, with Britten himself directing from the harpsichord. Back then, eminent scholar Jack Westrop called Dido and Aeneas not a flawless masterpiece, and Thomas Beecham said it was toast and water musical fare. But for Benjamin Britten, it was unquestionably a masterpiece, even though it's always needed a certain amount of editorial work. There's no autograph score. In Britten's version of Dido and Aeneas, there are two main areas, one general, the other specific, in which his own musical personality asserts itself. I don't really want to say imposes itself, but I am aware that some people will. The first is the realisation of the harpsichord continuo part. Nowadays, we're used to hearing tasteful, informed, idiomatic and spontaneous-sounding continuo playing. There have been generations who've trained in the art, following in the wake of Gustav Leonhardt and others. Today's players can read figured bass at sight as easily as a tabloid newspaper. But in the 1950s, this was simply not the case. Although it's the immensely gifted and scholarly George Malcolm, not Britten, at the harpsichord on this recording, and although Britten himself said in 1951 that no definitive version of this part is possible or desirable, Malcolm sticks to the script and plays every note of Britten's own realisation. The instrument itself would have been a great big pedalled monster with that peculiarly resonant plonking sound that is so seldom heard anymore. And Britten liked to use the harpsichord to underline the music's rhythmic structure and point up the drama. It was of its age, and once you've muttered that mantra a few times, you can relax and perhaps even enjoy the timing, wit and invention of it all. Britten's operatic instincts also came to the fore at the end of Act Two. He called Aeneas's departure peculiar and unsatisfactory, and said it cries out for some strong dramatic music. So he borrowed some more of Purcell's music from the Indian Queen and elsewhere to make a scene for the sorceress and her acolytes. So this is a bit of Dido that you may not have been expecting. A cavalier interpolation, perhaps. But 21st century musical directors take quite a lot of liberties of the same kind in this repertoire.
Sind so Chums have spent Ameri dance billet.
Then sind so Chums have spent Ameri dance billet.
Ameri dance billet.
Ameri dance billet.
By the nymphs and nymphs of Carthage, by the nymphs and nymphs of Carthage, to please us, fish all arms, to ease us.
Then sind so Chums have spent Ameri dance billet.
Then since our chums have sped, Ameri dance billet.
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 Our dance that shall be.
Ada Mandikian as the sorceress, with Jean Alistair and Rosemary Phillips, her own personal witches, with the Purcell Singers and English Opera Group Orchestra, conducted by Benjamin Britten. Britten once said, "I had never realised, before I first met Purcell's music, that words could be set with such ingenuity, with such colour." The next pair of pieces demonstrates just what he absorbed. First, we're going to hear the opening of his Canticle No. 4, written in 1971, The Journey of the Magi. It's a setting of T.S. Eliot for alto, tenor and baritone, with piano accompaniment. And then the whole of the piece by Purcell that surely must have contributed to Britten's store of vocal writing skills, his macabre scene, also for alto, tenor and baritone, with continuo, Saul and the Witch at Endor. Just for today, continuo means piano. I've chosen Britten's realisation of the work.
Cold, coming, coming wind. just the worst time, the worst time, the worst time of the year for a journey. And such a long journey. The way's deep, the way's deep, and the weather sharp. A hard time we had of it.
Thank you.
Moral of the story, meddle with the occult at your peril. Sarah Walker, John Mark Ainsley and Simon Keenlyside, with pianist Graham Johnson, in Britten's realisation of Purcell's Saul and the Witch at Endor. And before it, the opening of Britten's canticle The Journey of the Magi, sung by Christopher Ainsley, Ben Johnson and Benedict Nelson, with pianist James Baillieu. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, discovering the rewards for Benjamin Britten of paying close attention to the word-setting skills of Henry Purcell. As a singer, I treasure the sheer rightness and helpfulness of both composers writing for the voice, and remember well an early music show of a few years ago when my guest, the writer and critic Jonathan Keats, declared Purcell to be the finest setter of English poetry of the whole Baroque and beyond. When I was researching these programmes, I picked Jonathan's brains via email, and I'm only sorry that there's no time today to play two works which he believes to be closely linked. Purcell's analysis of maternal awe and worry, The Blessed Virgin's Expostulation, and Britten's outcry of guilt for unutterable sin, Phaedra. Well worth exploring, though. I must own up to not always enjoying Britten's piano realisations when he seems to be trying too hard to make the instrument sound like a continuo harpsichord. But he is always true to Purcell's way of musical thinking, especially when he adds his own eccentric touches in full piano mode. Here are two irresistible numbers featuring trumpets, real and implied.
Sound the trumpet till alarm.
You make the listening shores rebound.
You make the listening shores rebound.
Sound the trumpet
till alarm.
You make the listening shores rebound.
On the instruments of joy,
and skillful scholars can employ
to celebrate the glories of this day.
The glories of this day.
On the sprite, 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 the spr
to celebrate the glories of this day.
Oh,
Tracks from pianist Graham Johnson's indispensable recorded assembly of all Britain's Purcell song realisations, a two-disc set, starrily cast. We heard first Anthony Rolfe Johnson and John Mark Ainslie, and Graham, of course, in Sound the Trumpet, then Felicity Lott with Hark the Echoing Air. Confession time. I once sang Britain's version of Hark the Echoing Air as an encore to a perfectly serious recital with harpsichord. And no one said a thing. In the programme book for the first production of Peter Grimes, Britten wrote, "One of my chief aims is to try and restore to the musical setting of the English language a brilliance, freedom and vitality that have been curiously rare since the death of Purcell." We're moving on to another of his operas now, A Midsummer Night's Dream. And there's a consensus that Oberon's aria, "I Know a Bank Where the Wild Thyme Blows," owes much of its erotic charge to Britons having heard the role's creator, Alfred Deller, singing Purcell's Sweeter Than Roses. Purcell's songs are often in two parts, the sensual, declamatory, recitative-like setting of the scene, followed by an extrovert dance finale, all action. Sweeter Than Roses is the exemplar here. Oberon's aria begins in the same languorous fashion, and although it may not change its tempo, the second half contains the promise of action regarding Titania. Here's my recording of the Purcell, and after that, who else but James Bowman, embodiment of the role of Oberon for a generation, in the scene from Britten's A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Sweet. Hast thou the flower there?
James Bowman as Britain's and Shakespeare's Oberon, with the City of London Sinfonia's Swooning Strings, conducted by Richard Hickox. Before him, me, singing Sweeter Than Roses by Purcell, with theorbo player Paula Chateauneuf, harpsichordist Richard Egar, and gamba player Mark Levy. Finally, we go from Britain's Shakespeare to Purcell and Britain's Shakespeare, The Faerie Queen. Britain made a shortened version of this semi-opera for concert performance at the Aldborough Festival in 1967. 8 years on from that Dido recording, Purcell was still not as highly regarded by concertgoers as he is now. Britain's assistant, Imogen Holst, wrote that, We knew that a staged production of the entire work would have been impracticable. Even the most enthusiastic of our audiences would have lacked the stamina to sit through 5 spoken acts of Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream, interspersed with at least 2.5 hours of incidental music. Well, perhaps they were right. Even today, the play and the music seldom meet on the same stage. But nowadays we all have a great deal more stamina, for Purcell's enchanting songs and dances, at least. The idea of making a 4-act entertainment of the opera came from Peter Piers. Imogen Holst and Benjamin Britten agreed that it was the obvious thing to do, but some favourite numbers would have to be sacrificed, and the order must be changed to make it hang together in its new form. To modern completists, this seems fairly horrifying, but no two productions were alike in content or order in Purcell's day either, so practicality has precedent. Imogen Holst found it an enthralling task to go through original scores and parts, weeding out inconsistencies in the markings and scorings. And she and Britten made several significant changes in orchestration, particularly in the woodwind department, remembering, as she said, the late 17th century custom of doubling the string parts or oboes and bassoons whenever the music seemed to call for it. I'm going to end with 2 scenes from the 1971 recording of Britten's version, with him conducting the Ambrosian Opera Chorus, the ECO, and an inspiring array of his favourite singers. First, a welcome chance to hear Jennifer Vivian delighting in Oberon's Birthday, a song on a ground which ends in possibly my favourite little dance in all Baroque music. Now the night is chased away, and so, alas, is this celebration of Orpheus Britannicus times 2. I grew up with the music of Benjamin Britten. Now I know that it's Purcell, whom I discovered a bit later, who makes some of Britten's music what it is. And in turn, Britten did a great deal to help the English appreciate Purcell's achievements. As you listen to this rustic scene of haymaking of sundry kinds, whatever your thoughts on historically informed performance, just be like Mopsa and surrender to Corydon. These two earthy lovers may sound more like Canon Chasuble chasing Miss Prism round a suburban shrubbery, but oh, the joy of hearing Peter Piers and Alfreda Hodgson. How they love this music. So did Benjamin Britten. And so do we.
Thank you.
Music from Purcell's Mask the Fairy Queen, the English Chamber Orchestra, conducted by Benjamin Britten. Music doing the haymaking in that recording, with a little help from Peter Pears and Alfreda Hodgson. The Early Music Show was presented by Catherine Bott, and the producer was Paul Frankel.
Radio 3's Free Thinking. Ahead of our annual Autumn Festival of Ideas in Gateshead, Free Thinking is on its travels this summer, taking up residency at some leading summer events across the country.
Nightwaves Here in Hay explores whether love is good for us.
I don't particularly want to live in someone else's head, but I do want to hold someone else's hand.
Free Thinking in the summer, Tuesday night at 10 o'clock on BBC Radio 3.
Now, the Sunday concert is a couple of minutes away. The Cuckoo by Louis-Claude Daquin, played by Sophie Yates. Cuckoos must have been a bit confused this year when they arrived in this country, finding the weather they did. This is BBC Radio 3, just gone 2 o'clock. As you may know, the violinist Hugh Maguire died on Friday. He was leader, concertmaster and principal player of the London Symphony Orchestra, and between 1962 and 67, leader of the BBC Symphony Orchestra. He was also leader of the Melos Ensemble and the Allegri Quartet. And he was professor at the Royal Academy of Music and violin tutor to the National Youth Orchestra of Great Britain. Two of his pupils were Jackie Shave and Magnus Johnston. And Jackie and Magnus play the two violin solos in the first piece in the Sunday concert now, here on BBC Radio 3. Now, the concert was recorded last weekend at Snape Maltings during the Aldborough Festival before Hugh Maguire's death. And the Britain Symphonia, and especially Jackie Shave and Magnus Johnston, would like to dedicate, in retrospect, their performance of Tippett's Fantasia Concertante on a theme of Corelli to Hugh Maguire. So now, here's Louise Fryer.
Welcome again to Snape Maltings, the principal venue of the Aldborough Festival, which is currently in full swing. Now in its 66th year, the music of its co-founder Benjamin Britten is always in evidence, but especially so in 2013, 100 years since his birth. Britten's song cycle, Les Illuminations, forms the centrepiece of today's concert, given by Britten Symphonia with soprano Sophie Bevan, and the conductor is Ryan Wigglesworth. We'll also hear three songs intended for Les Illuminations, but discarded by Britten. They were resurrected and orchestrated almost 30 years after Britten's death by Colin Matthews, who as a young man worked with the composer here in Aldborough. Britain was passionate about new music, and there's a world premiere of a new piece commissioned from Judith Weir before the concert ends with Bartók's music for strings, percussion and celeste. Bartók's influence is felt in the first piece too. It's by another great 20th century composer, Michael Tippett, in theory looking back to the Baroque. A love of Purcell's music was a passion he shared with Benjamin Britten, but here it's a theme by Corelli that provides the basis for this Fantasia Concertante, composed for Corelli's tercentenary and first performed at the Edinburgh Festival in 1953. But this is not a mere pastiche. After the authentic 18th century opening, Tippett lets his own voice come shining through. Two violins and a solo cello play concertante. The violinists are the leader of Britten's Sinfonia, Jacqueline Shave, and Magnus Johnston, standing in front of the rest of the ensemble, with cellist Caroline Dernley. And here comes Brian Wigglesworth to conduct Michael Tippett's Fantasia Concertante on a theme of Corelli.